Well, guys, it's a privilege to be here today. We're going to talk about something a little bit fun today. The title of the message is called Your Move. And before we'll get to the place where you'll understand why the sermon is entitled Your Move, but before we do that, I just have a little bit of a question for you. Do you guys have a place that you go to whenever you just need to process, or a thing that you do to help you kind of work out things in your brain? I personally, if I am feeling really overwhelmed, or if I feel like I really have a lot on my mind and I need to work things out, I know Kathy Butler's a lot like this too. I go for a drive, okay? And I don't know what it is about going on a drive, but as I am driving those country roads, it's like my mind will twist and turn, much like the road that I'm on, and I'm able to just kind of process through things that I need to. And one of the things that surfaces a lot for me is, why am I here? What am I doing that's making a significance? What does my life mean something? Am I significant in any way? Would anyone really miss me if I left or moved on? Now, don't get me wrong on this, okay? I'm not like contemplating going off the road at this point because I don't know the meaning of life, okay? That's not what I mean. But there is this idea that keeps surfacing for me, and it's, am I doing anything of significance with my life? What does my life look like? Am I serving anyone? Am I helping anyone? If I migrated to Canada today, would I be missed here in Topeka? And I got to tell you, this is something that surfaces a lot for me, and I think it's a lot because of my profession. I'm a pastor. So, you know, part of my job is to serve others, and I think that's probably a driving reason why I became a pastor, is I wanted to help people. I didn't care how, I didn't care how much or how often, I didn't need to be a DS, I just wanted to help people when I could. But, you know, even in this profession, sometimes I wonder, am I doing my job right? Am I really serving others to the best of my ability, or do I get so caught up in life, just life and existing, that I'm missing something that could be more? You know what I mean? And so often while I'm driving, I'll start to wonder about like completely changing careers, right? And maybe migrating up to Montana where no one knows who I am, starting a ranch for herding kids. Okay? Or maybe do a coffee shop in the middle of a town right next to a campus somewhere where I can invest in young families or young adults who are trying to figure out life. Isn't that ironic? I'm having a daydream where I'm helping people figure out life in a daydream where I'm trying to figure out the meaning of my life. I'm not saying that this process is like foolproof, okay? But as I'm driving, I start to wonder, what could my life look like if service was the primary contributor to why I do what I do? And guys, I don't think I'm the only one here. I say that because, first of all, I see some of you guys nodding, identifying with what I'm saying. But also, I mean, there's a point to a midlife crisis, right? There's a point to the reason why the divorce rate is so high and people are always wanting something new. There's a reason why so many college students will change their major multiple times before they land on something, because we are fighting average. We don't want an average existence. We want to do something, anything that will make us feel significant. And my friends, I think that's a very natural thing. Have you felt that? Have you felt that need or that desire to go, I want to have a life where people will actually miss me when I'm gone? And I think the place that we see this or we feel this the most is that whenever we're met with our mortality. Whenever we go to a funeral or we go to a place where people are looking back on someone's life and they're reflecting on how they related to or affected the people around them, and we go, what will mine look like? What will my life lead? What will I be remembered for? And for so many of us, I don't think it's wrong. We want to be missed. We want to have affected someone, anyone, as long as we don't have this average life, right? Well, I have good news. We are not the first people that have dealt with this. In fact, back in Jesus' day, when Jesus was alive, his disciples wrestled with this exact same question. You see, what you need to understand about the disciples, and I've talked about this before, but if for anyone that hasn't heard this before, disciples, whenever you grew up in the first century, okay, every man was like groomed to be a possible disciple of a priest. Okay? And what they would do is they would look for someone who had really good ideas that they identified with, and they would look for someone that they could follow, okay? But not everyone would cut this process. The temple would go through this process where you had to memorize scripture and you had to answer all sorts of questions, and if you didn't cut it, you were sent home to do your father's work. Okay? And what's interesting is every single one of the disciples that Jesus called was sent back to do work that had nothing to do with the temple. They weren't chosen to be this awesome disciple of one of the prophets or one of the priests of the day. And so for John and James, the two that we're going to be talking about today, they had been sent back to do their father's work, which meant that to everyone else in the community, they were seen as kind of average. As insignificant, not good enough to cut the possibility of being a disciple of one of the learned priests of the day, so they were sent back to do their father's work. They were fishermen. And one day, Jesus came to them, and he asked them to follow him, all right? And join him on this epic journey of teaching people a completely different way of life. And when Jesus did that, I think the disciples jumped on the opportunity because they were wrestling with what we are wrestling with, this idea that they wanted more than just average. They wanted more than just normal, everyday, day-to-day life. They were looking to make a difference. But my friends, this didn't happen right away. You see, Jesus didn't automatically turn out popular, okay? At first, Jesus wasn't even really followed, okay? It wasn't until he started doing miracles that people started looking at Jesus and going, oh, this guy, he's got it. And if he doesn't got it, at least we can experience miracles in the process. So let's go follow him. In fact, one of the disciples that we look at, his name's Matthew, okay? Matthew did is he started documenting everything that Jesus did in his 3 years of ministry. And one of the things Matthew documented in Matthew chapter 4 is it says that Jesus really literally couldn't go anywhere without a crowd following him, okay? In Matthew 4:25, it said large crowds followed him wherever he went. People from Galilee, the 10 towns, Jerusalem, from all over Judea, and from the east of the Jordan River. So my friends, these disciples, okay, went from very average, all right, to be famous by association. Do you know what I'm talking about? What I'm talking about is like because of the people you're hanging around, people know who you are, okay? I've only had this experience once. This was in my middle school, all right? I have an older brother named Todd, and he is good at literally everything, okay? I don't think Todd has ever done anything that he hasn't succeeded at, all right? And he was also very popular, okay? So from 6th to 8th grade year, I was known as Little Pete or Todd's little sister, okay? I am pretty convinced not a single person knew my actual name at the school. They only knew me in association with my older brother. And that's what happened to these disciples. They went from this average life of being nothing, just fishermen, okay, to being known by thousands of people and surrounded by thousands of people all the time. They couldn't go anywhere without, hey, you're Jesus's friend, right? Yeah, that's right. I'm one of them. I'm one of the 13, the 12 and Jesus, get it. And you know what I think probably happened? I think that as they were going and as they were following Jesus, some of the people actually looked to the disciples and said, hey, will you be able to do a miracle? Hey, can you pray with us? And all of a sudden, the disciples are like, man, this is pretty sweet. They started talking like Jesus. They started praying like Jesus. They even started to try to attempt miracles like Jesus did. And my friends, they started to believe that they are living a really great life. In fact, they're great, right? Because they're able to do some of these miracles. And all of a sudden, Jesus realizes that the disciples have missed the point a little bit. You see, what made Jesus great while doing those miracles was not necessarily the miracle, though that is pretty cool. What made Jesus great is his willingness to serve in any moment. What made Jesus great was his willingness that even when he was tired and exhausted, he still gave himself to the people whenever they needed it. Now, this isn't up on the PowerPoint slide, but this is something as a pastor I was really challenged with. As I was doing this study, and actually I've shared this with the staff a little bit before too, I love reading through the Gospels. And the reason why I love doing that is that's when you get to know Jesus' personality just a little bit. And this is what I find interesting. If you guys want to, you can go check this out later. But in Mark 6, and it's around verse 30, okay? Let me set it up for you. Jesus has just found out that his cousin had been put to death, and it was pretty gruesome death, all right? Literally just found this out. He was surrounded, like he always is, by thousands of people in the crowd. And it actually says in Mark that Jesus looks at the disciples and he goes, "Guys, I am exhausted." In Mark, it says that they had been so busy that they hadn't even eaten anything all day long, okay? And Jesus says, "Guys, I'm exhausted. Let's retreat here. We're going to go get on a boat. We're going to get away from this crowd because I just need to process." Okay, the boat in the sea is like Shauna's driving on a country road for Jesus, all right? He needed to process. And so it says he gets in the boat, and they row to the other side of the river, or to the other side of the sea, and you guys probably have heard this before. What happened? The crowds noticed. And so by the time he gets to the other side of the sea, there is another crowd waiting for Jesus there. And this is the part that struck me so interestingly. It says that Jesus, though he was tired, though he was exhausted, he had compassion on the crowd. And he continued to teach them. He continued to serve them. And the disciples still aren't really picking up on the significance of why Jesus had such an amazing existence. It wasn't because of the miracles he was carrying on. It was because of the service he was carrying out. So Jesus realizes that his disciples, they're getting kind of a big head. Okay? I mean, but after all, wouldn't we? If we had just this natural, average, everyday life where no one really knew us, and all of a sudden someone came along, and by association, we became one of the most popular 13 people in the area, where people were coming up to you and asking for pictures because of the friend that you're associated with. And all of a sudden, they start to realize that people are looking up to them as much as Jesus. People are asking them for things as much as Jesus. And so, like a lot of us probably would, they start comparing resumes. Oh, I'm better because of this. Yeah, well, you weren't able to do this miracle, and I was 2 days ago. Do you remember that? And they start arguing over who is the greatest. And Jesus overhears them. In Mark 9, this is what I think is so funny. In Mark 9, they're arguing on the road, okay? And Jesus asks them later, he goes, "Hey guys, what are you talking about?" And they know better, because it says in Scripture they did not want to answer him because they were arguing over who was the greatest. But Jesus knew. And he asked him, he goes, "Guys, why are you arguing over this? Like, what makes this so important?" They're like, "Arguing? What? What are you talking about? We weren't arguing about anything." It's like, come on, man. And so he says to them something that is so countercultural to the time. It was so countercultural to what they were thinking. He looks at them and he says, "My friends, what were you discussing?" They tried to not claim it. And he said, "Whoever wants to be first must take last place and be the servant of everyone." Now, my friends, that doesn't say the servant of your family. Okay? That doesn't say just the servant of the people that attend your church. That doesn't say be the servant of the people that you like and don't worry about the ones that you don't. What does it say? A servant of, let's try that one more time because there were like four of you. A servant of, that was better, thank you. A servant of everyone. Now, quick aside, all right? There is an audio clip right now that has taken social media by storm. I see some of you guys kind of nodding your heads. It's this audio clip of someone saying very clearly the word Laurel, okay? And some goobernoggins out there think that the word that they are saying is Yancey. Raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about so I know I'm not just talking to deaf ears here. Okay, so a lot of you, all right? Team Laurel all the way, in case you're wondering. All right? Yes, Libby, thank you. You're my favorite. Okay, so in this little moment, okay, I feel like Jesus discovered a Yancey versus Laurel moment here, okay? Because he very clearly states to his disciples that if you want to be greatest, if you want to have a great existence, you must serve in any instance, right? And that's what he says to them, but literally one chapter later, guys, one chapter later, James and John come up to Jesus and basically talk about the exact same issue. And this is what goes down. Mark chapter 9, or chapter 10, sorry. I'm just going to paraphrase this for you because you all are big boys and girls, and if you want to check me, you can go read it later, okay? But James and John comes up to Jesus, okay? And this is what I think is so funny, because I'm pretty sure they knew they shouldn't ask who is the greatest, but basically that's what they want to know. But they're smart enough to phrase it a different way, okay? And so they go up to Jesus, and actually in this version it says they ask if he will do them a favor, okay? But in the New International Version, this is what I think is so funny. They try to get Jesus to agree before they even ask the question. Okay, so in the NIV version, it says that they say, hey, Jesus, will you give us anything we ask? Has that ever worked for anyone? Students, have you ever tried to do that with your parents? Hey, mom and dad, will you say yes no matter what comes out of my mouth next? Does anyone ever say yes to that? But that's what they try. And they say, Jesus, can you please just give us whatever we ask? And Jesus knows better. I mean, he knows what they're about to ask. And he goes, what's your request? And they go, okay, here's the thing, okay? We're not going to ask who's the greatest, but we are wondering, in your place of honor, when you get honored in heaven or in your kingdom, because you see, they're still hoping that it's going to be on this earth, that his kingdom's going to be on this earth. So whenever you're sitting on your throne, okay, we don't need to be the greatest, but we would like the greatest seats, one on the left and one on the right, okay? Good? And Jesus looks at him and goes, you do not even realize what you're asking. Okay? Now, really quickly, if you're Jesus, okay, can you imagine how disheartening this is for you? You have invested your time in these people. You have given your time and your effort to teach these people what it means, these men, what it means to be average. In fact, or to be great. In fact, you have even like brought them out of their average life so they can experience life with you, and they still completely miss what you say very explicitly. Now, I see some parents of teens nodding like you know how this goes, right? Like, I very clearly said to stop playing video games and clean up your room, and you must have heard, please play video games for an extra 2 hours because that's what's going on, right? Can you imagine how disheartening this would be for Jesus? And so he looks at all the disciples again, and he goes, hey, guys, we're going to do this one more time, because obviously, just a few days ago, you guys didn't catch it. So let's go over this one more time, okay? And in Matthew chapter, closer towards the end, in verse, let's see, 44, or actually, let's back up to verse 42. He called all of his disciples together and he said, you know that the rulers of this world lord over people. And officials flaunt their authority over all of those that are under them. But among you, It will be different. Now, my friends, I want to stop and talk about this for a second. He didn't say it should be different. Okay? He says, among you guys, if you are really following my example, this is not an option. It will happen. That among you, it will be different because you will, if you want to be the leader among us, you must be a servant. Now, my friends, I see some of you starting to check out at this point. Like, Pastor Shauna, I know I need to serve, okay? But I do this, 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 and this. Or maybe even, Pastor Shauna, I know I need to serve, but I just don't have time, okay? But my friends, here's the thing, okay? This is exactly what Jesus came to model. It's not about how often you read your Bible, though that is important. It's not about how often you attend this church, though, my friends, it is important. It's not about how much you tithe. It's, and guys, hear me on this, okay? Sometimes I think it's harder for Christians to give their time than their money, and that is saying something because I know how important money is to y'all. But my friends, my time, and I can only speak for me here, but my time, when I cross my garage door and I take off my shoes and I get set in my time at my house, oh my word, it is so hard for me to put my shoes back on. When I am running late, thank you. When I am running late and I see someone that needs help, it's really easy to not help them when I can justify by I need to do this, this, that, and the other. But my friends, this exactly, I think, is what Jesus came to model. An existence of humility and service. And so he essentially says to his disciples again, if you want a great existence, you must serve in any instance. Now, my friends, notice I didn't say every instance. Okay? Because sometimes God might not be calling you to serve in a specific place, but I say any because if you feel checked to serve, you should probably serve. And that's what Jesus expects of us. Now, do you know what I find interesting from the scripture verse? The one from Matthew 10? Jesus didn't ever mean these things, oh my word. Jesus didn't ever berate the disciples for wanting a great existence. Notice he didn't say, oh my word, you want a great existence? How dare you? But what he said is that if you want a great existence, you have to redefine greatness. For me, what's impressive is when you are able to serve in spite of the inconvenience it may cause you. What is impressive to me, what gets my notice, is not how many, how nice of a job you have or what your GPA is or how many different tournaments you won in your sports games that you're playing. It's how you serve and when you serve when I ask you to. My friends, this call to greatness is actually an invitation to serve. And my friends, I know this is hard. I know this is hard because for a lot of us, we're already in our routines. And we're already so busy just existing in this life. And that's fine. But if you're ever feeling this need for something more, if you're ever sitting here going, I need something more than what I have, or I want to give something more, I want to have a little bit more significance than just showing up at church or just existing in life and then eating and then going to bed the next day and doing it all over again. If you want more than that, my friends, if you want a great existence, you must serve in any instance. That's what a guy named Taylor did. Taylor is a 23-year-old boy who decided back in high school that he was going to serve. And when he did that, I don't even think he realized the lasting impact he had on some people's lives. Now let's go ahead and watch this video and see what Taylor did.
My name's Tim Strickland, and I'm a husband, and I'm a business guy that in the community. I serve here at North Point Church, love it. Been involved in transit for 13 years. The reason I started was kind of selfish. It was, I just wanted to be a better dad. And my son was in seventh grade, and it was kind of, you know, hey, I want to be around what he's doing so I can learn what's going on in his life, and then maybe, you know, leverage that and understand that, and that way you can be better at what you do as a father. So, you know, I felt ill-prepared in that I didn't know what I didn't know and what I was going to teach them, but we can go hang out with them. We can be adult figures in their lives and just, you're your guys. I remember on Walking Wisely weekend, and they asked, you know, students to look up to their leaders and if they wanted to talk about a decision they had made. And I remember one young man just looking up and kind of nodding at me, and I'm like, wow, they made a decision to accept Christ. You know, that's pretty cool to see that happen and be part of that. So my son Taylor ended up being a high school leader for transit, and he served with two other guys who are some of my best friends. They were part of my men's group. For Taylor, he was an only child, and these young men were like his little brothers, and he loved them, and he, you know, really invested in them. I mean, that was the closest to a sibling he ever had. You know, those same guys that he invested in were the ones who showed up for him. But when he passed away, excuse me, he passed away on, he'd had a car accident, was killed in September of 2016. And those young men were all in college and they were elsewhere. And they came back and stood up for him. It was huge.
When I joined this small group, Taylor brought to me the ability to be outgoing and have the courage to encounter people that I had never met in my life and open up to them in 3 years.
I can't put into words how much Taylor had an impact on me.
He reflected the love of Christ into all of our lives, and I'm always going to be very grateful for that.
He became more of a brother to me.
He taught us all how to be genuine, fine young men.
Taylor would help others without a second thought, even if it was an inconvenience to him.
He gave me this brotherhood, and 8 years later, they're still my best friends.
The empathy and understanding that he showed me has stuck with me forever.
I remember walking into transit the Sunday after Taylor was killed or passed away. And there was a line of men, 20, 30 deep, who just wanted to give me a hug and tell me they loved me and they were sorry for the loss. It's one of those special times that you're like, wow. This is way bigger than investing in students. For him to be able to have that legacy of investing in those students and Jacob and Chris and Sebastian and Alex and all those, Andrew, those boys who stood up there and talk about his impact, well, that's legacy. And that his story continues to be told. It's a legacy that I could have never imagined. Investing my story in others has made me a better human being, a better father, better husband, better person, and better part of the community. because I think that's what's helped transform me as a human being from something that's about me to something that's about others. So for those that are worried about they don't have what it takes, I think God has plenty of what it takes, and all we have to do is be willing to be useful.
I think God has what it takes. All we have to do is be willing to be useful. My friends, I want a life like Taylor's. Do you know what we don't know about Taylor from that video? We don't know what kind of car he drove. We don't know what GPA he had, what college he attended, what kind of job he had, or how successful he was. What we heard about was his life of service. My friends, sometimes I wonder if service is really service, if we're not inconvenienced a little bit. Because it's easy to serve when it's convenient, isn't it? It's easy to stop and help someone else when our to-do list isn't overwhelming. But it's in the middle of life itself that God will check us and ask us to serve. And it's when we say yes, like Taylor, that we really know and experience the significance of this life. Are you hurting today? Go serve. Are you depressed? Do you feel minute? Go serve. Are you the boss in your business or the measly intern? Go serve. Because, my friends, it's in the middle of service that we experience we are instruments used to carry out the very heart and nature of God. John Wesley, he's a preacher that has really formed the existence of the Nazarene denomination. In one of his sermons, he talked about these two different acts or works, okay? There's works of piety, which is like things for your own well-being, okay, that you do to be a Christian. So Bible work, prayer, fasting, meditation, all of those kinds of things, okay? But then there's works of grace, and works of grace involves acts of service. And what he said in one of his sermons is he goes, sometimes you're not going to have time to do both. You're not going to have time to do acts of piety or acts of service. And this is what I find interesting. He says, but if you err on giving one more attention than the other, give the acts of service more attention. Do you know why? And this is what's so powerful. Because it's in the times of acts of service that you are closest to the heart of God. My friends, we're faced with many, many choices in our lives. And I know for a lot of us, busyness is a really hard thing to get around. We're busy, and probably busy with a lot of good things, and that keeps us from serving. But my friends, what I see a lot, and this was actually, I did this for my own knowledge this week, okay? We have a lot of things that keep us busy, but have no real eternal value in life, okay? And this is what I mean, like countless hours of Netflix, countless hours of video gaming. I do both. This is not me judging, okay? Or we're on our phone, or we're on social media. My friends, this is what's so interesting. Can you believe, okay? I downloaded an app, which I would really encourage you guys to do this if you have a smartphone that you use a lot, okay? There's an app called Moments, okay? And what you do is you download this app, and it will tell you all of the following. How many hours you're on your phone, how many times you pick up your phone a day, okay? And what apps are getting most of your time, all right? Now, I am about to be very transparent with you, and I do not want any of you judging me. Well, you can, but just don't tell me about it, okay? I downloaded this on Wednesday, and I have racked up 16 hours on my cellular device. Okay? Now, in my defense, I do feel like I have to give my defense. It does count my audiobooks when I'm listening, okay? And normally, whenever I'm listening to podcasts and audiobooks, I'm multitasking and doing something else, okay? But nonetheless, can you believe I picked up my phone 47 times yesterday? 47 times! Also, don't judge me on this either, I was driving a lot yesterday. Oh, I heard that. But my friends, what this did for me, now granted, a lot of the times it was 5 minutes here, 2 minutes here, 1 minute here, but my friends, 16 cumulative hours that I was on my phone, and hear me on this, I don't talk on the phone very often. So it was probably not using the phone for what it was made for. Can you imagine what would have happened if I could have used those 16 hours for something different? What would the Topeka Rescue Mission have gotten from me if I would have given those 16 hours to something with eternal value? What would my neighbors have gotten from me if I tried to relationally engage with them instead of being on my phone? My friends, this is quiet. Because even if we don't have time, even when we don't think we have time, sometimes, normally, we have more than we think. And even if you don't, I have something for you. It's called strategic service. And strategic service means, my friends, to use time you would already be using to serve someone else instead of yourself. How are you doing as strategic service? Let me give you a statistic. This is a really well-known fact to a lot of long-going church time goers. But normally in most churches, only 20% of the attenders contribute in some significant way to the church that they go to regularly. Now let me ask you this, my friends. That means that about 80% of you sitting here today are missing out on strategic service because you have not gotten involved in serving the church. Another way of strategic service is maybe some dedicated family time that you guys do. Do you have a movie night every week? Or do you have a date night every week? What would that look like if just one time a month even, instead of movie night, we do strategic service? And as a family, we go serve someone else. My friends, what would Topeka look like if every single person here today decided to somehow strategically serve? What would our relationships look like if we took the attitude of service first in our relationships? What would our ministries here look like if we had people serving on a regular basis rather than just sitting and receiving the service? My friends, we all have some sort of opportunity to serve. And my friends, I think it's safe to say that the indication of how much you're willing to give your time away is an indicator of just how surrendered you are to what God is calling you to do. Have you guys ever seen those traffic wands? Do you know what I'm talking about? The traffic wands that, like, traffic control officers will use in the dark to, like, guide traffic. You guys know what I'm talking about? Look at the picture if you don't. Yeah? I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with aircraft carriers, okay? But I used to love aircraft carriers. I thought that for a little while I was going to be a Navy fighter pilot until I realized I have motion sickness, and that doesn't really work very well. But for the longest time, guys, I used to watch a show called JAG. I don't know if you guys ever watched that, but guys, I was going to be a Navy fighter pilot. In fact, I did two different reports on the Tomcat, the F-14 Tomcat, okay, which is actually retired now. But all of that to say, one of the places that I feel like these traffic control wands are the most needed is in the dark on an aircraft carrier. on an aircraft carrier. You see, most of the time, pilots only know when to take off. Like, there is a key to a good takeoff, and that is timing is everything. Okay? And the way a pilot knows when it's time to move is but only by hand gestures of the deck crew. Okay? They don't have anyone going in their ear going, okay, now it's time to take off. It's all based on the movements and the hand gestures of the deck crew. Now, an aircraft carrier, especially at night, or especially in like a hostile territory, they can't just stop running missions because it's dark out. Okay? And this is where the traffic wand is absolutely paramount. Because it is only with that traffic wand that the deck crew can communicate to the pilot when it is time to move, when it is time to actually take off. Without those traffic wands, they would not be able to see the communication they need to know when to take off. So all of you guys today, I hope, got a little glow stick, okay? And this is supposed to represent one of those traffic wands. And I want you guys to do me a favor this week. Will you do me a favor? Just for 1 week, I want you to put this sermon to a test. I want you to be intentional about any time you can, as much as you can, serve when even if you could be served. Make the choice to serve, and hopefully this glow stick will remind you of that. Now, my friends, service can be difficult because, at least for me, I get nervous about getting taken advantage of, okay? Or if I give a little bit, then I'm going to have to give a lot. But my friends, listen to me. That is so counter Jesus. Because this is what Jesus modeled. Now we're going to go into a time of just a little bit of reflection, okay? And I want to leave you with this one thought. It's up on the board. I don't think anyone expects you to do everything. But I know for a fact that God is probably calling you to do something. It's your move. What are you going to choose? Let's go into a time of prayer. God, I love reading the Gospels because I'm able to see your heart carried out in Jesus. And over again, whenever I think I know how Jesus might react in a situation, it seems he always goes counterintuitive, countercultural, and he always chooses to serve. God, it's so easy to get busy. It's so easy to fill our time with this empty busyness that just kind of keeps us from really thinking, but doesn't have any real value in our life. My God, please, please, please bring this to our attention this week. Bring this to our attention when we are participating in activities that are just empty and they don't really have much value. And God, next time that we struggle with this question about what we are made for and what we're supposed to do, God, trigger that. Trigger that question and that aching inside of our heart to trigger us to go serve. God, give us your heart. Give us your eyes to see the way you see so that we can serve the way you ask. My friend, I pray that you will help us be you to our community. In Jesus' name, amen. We're going to close today with a song called Not to Us, just kind of reminding us that anything we do is not for our glory, it's for God's. But this week, I pray that you take your traffic wands and it will trigger you to serve. Because, my friends, if you want a great existence, you got to serve in every instance. Thanks.